per qualche pagina da qui. It was first described in the 1950s, no, and the definition is inappropriate enlargement of the heart, no, in the absence of an obvious cause of left ventricular hypertrophy. For example, if you have hypertension, then it is expected that you will have enlargement or hypertrophy of the heart. So that in this case, you don't have hypertension, or you don't have any other structural heart disease that will explain the presence of enlargement of the heart or hypertrophy. So that it seems that you've had enlargement of the heart since you were born. So it's not secondary to something else. Now usually, the IV septum, you'll see that term later, this is the interventricular septum, we will show you a picture later, is the one that is usually involved. No? And then usually, just like your blood pressure, there is systole and diastole. The heart has also systolic function and diastolic function. So in layman's term, systolic is the contraction of the heart, and diastole is resting, so relaxation. So the heart should pump, but should also relax properly, because if it does not relax properly, then you also have problems. I'll show you this picture of the gradient later. And then, so that in essence, because of the enlargement of the heart is quite stiff, so it's not relaxing properly. It can actually contract very strong, it's hyperdynamic. Hyperdynamic systolic function, but because of the stiffness, actually the muscle is quite unrelenting, non-compliant. So that it can also cause heart failure in the end and difficulty of breathing, which is the most common symptom of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So you can see here, this is the structure of a normal heart. This, we're talking about the left ventricle. This is the one, the muscles over here. This is the IV septum. This is the interventricular septum separating the left ventricle and the right ventricle. So normally, there is a normal value for the thickness of this muscle. This is the left atrium. And this is the outflow tract where the ventricle has to pump the blood into the aorta. So this should be open so that the blood can freely flow into the aorta and have a good cardiac output. And this is what you see in hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. You can see that there is an inappropriate thickening of this part of the interventricular septum compared to the other parts of the muscle of the left ventricle. So that if you measure that, it is more than 1.3 centimeters. The normal value is usually about 1.2. So this is thickened inappropriately, and only one portion. It is not a diffuse thickening of the heart muscle, which you would usually see in hypertension. But in this case, only one portion is hypertrophied. Now, if let's say that the upper portion of the septum is the one hypertrophied, in comparison to the previous slide, you can see that it also obstructs the flow to the aorta. And this is what we were talking about, a gradient between the pressure here and the pressure there. So there is actually what we call outflow tract obstruction, and it will cause, even despite the strong contractility of this muscle, the cardiac output is actually reduced because the flow towards the aorta is reduced, and the patients can possibly pass out or have what we call a syncopal episode because of the reduction in blood flow to the vital organs like the brain. So the overall, this, I think this is important for you, the overall prevalence is actually low. It is only 0.2%, or 1 out of 500 of the general population. And if you do, if you study all the echocardiograms that we've done in the hospital of unselected patients, it's actually about 0.5%. So you might see patients without symptoms who have the criteria by echocardiography of a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So you can see that it's really quite a rare phenomenon. But it is possibly the most common genetically transmitted cardiac disorder. So it's rare, but among genetically transmitted heart problems, this is going to be the most common. We've talked about this and increasing the mass. We saw that the cavity has become small because of the thickening of the heart muscle, mostly affecting the left ventricle rather than the right ventricle. The atria can become dilated because of the atrium has to pump the blood into the left ventricle, and therefore the atrium has to work harder because it has to pump blood into a ventricle which is non-compliant, is stiff, no? So the atrium dilates. Diastolic dysfunction, meaning it's a problem of relaxation, and you might see mitral regurgitation or flow from the ventricle back to the atrium because of the stiffness of the heart muscle. So that's a backward flow rather than forward flow into the aorta. So you can see here grossly what it looks like. This is normal. You can see the large left ventricular cavity, normal thickness of the heart muscle, and in hypertrophic, you can see the markedly thickened septum, and of course also the free wall, the small LV cavity. To differentiate from the more commonly seen dilated cardiomyopathy, you can see the muscles are thinned out in the large left ventricular cavity. Now, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is all inherited. Just a few things here. The pattern and extent of the hypertrophy. Just from the pictures I showed you, you can see that they can vary from person to person. It can be in the septum, it can be somewhere else. So it can vary from patient to patient. It is heterogeneous in amount of hypertrophy in different regions. So the most frequent is the picture I showed you, which is asymmetric septal hypertrophy, which is thickening of the septum. And it is disproportionate compared to the other parts of the heart. And about 30% of patients will be localized, only one portion in a single region. Some in unusual locations, like the back portion of the heart and other parts. And it is dynamic, the hypertrophy is dynamic. You may see that in infants, but usually you develop that during adolescence. So that, let's say that you do an echo in an infant of a patient with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, you might see that the echo is normal, but later on you can develop signs of a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Now, this is a variant that you see commonly. It was first described in Japan, but I think it's also common in Filipinos. It's like an Asian variant of cardiomyopathy, wherein the thickening is only in the apex of the heart. On the ECG, it will look like you have a myocardial infarction. So if you see an ECG and it looks very bad, you're going to get a high insurance premium because of this ECG. Because it looks like you have a myocardial infarction in the past. You have large T waves. But actually, the symptoms are quite mild and very benign course. These people can live a regular longevity just like you and me. So this is what it would look like. You can see that the thickening is only in the apex, and there is no obstruction to flow. You can see this by an echo, and this is quite a benign course. But again, the ECGs look very scary. So this is what the ECG would look like. You can see, you'll read it as diffuse myocardial ischemia, so that you're worried that this patient is at risk for a heart attack, or the ECG says that he's probably had a heart attack in the past. But when you do an echo, you see atypical cardiomyopathy, then that explains everything. Histology, the important thing about the histology on the microscope is fibrosis. So that when you see, we think that these muscles are thick, and therefore they're strong, right? Because they're different, just like the muscles that we build up, they're strong muscles. But actually, not like a muscle that's built up with weightlifting. In weightlifting, for example, the muscle cells hypertrophy, and that's why it's big. But in this case, the muscles don't really hypertrophy. There's actually a lot of scarring in between the muscles that make it thick. So you'll see fibrosis, scars, So that, you know, that consumes space and thickens the muscle up. This is also the reason. So if you look at this, it's like the muscle fibers are in disarray and they're not lined up. This is also the reason why, if you think of an electrical current that passes through your heart, which is normal, an electrical current passes through our heart. If the electrical current passes through areas which are scarred, then it will stop or slow down, and some are fast. So this is the reason why these patients get an irregular heart rhythm, and which is in fact the most common cause of sudden death in this population. So this histology, the fibrosis, explains why these people can get irregular heart rhythms. Again, it's autosomal dominant in at least 50%, but some are not. There can be sporadic forms. That means that there's no history in the family. All of a sudden, there's one patient with a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So this is due to spontaneous mutation of the gene. And genetic testing not yet easily available and remains largely a research tool. But in some places in the U.S., you can have genetic testing for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. So the problem is not just systolic because of the outflow tract obstruction. It's also the relaxation. And because now that you have a big muscle, you also need more blood supply to that muscle. But your arteries to the heart are not becoming more. So the same arteries, but now it has to supply more muscle. So you have actually a reduction in blood flow to the heart, or myocardial ischemia, which can cause symptoms. So we've talked about that. The systolic problem, we've talked about the diastolic, the poor relaxation because of the thickness of the muscle, the fibrosis. And this is the cause of the ischemia, or reduction in blood flow to the muscle, to the heart, increased muscle mass, inadequate capillary density formation. They don't become more despite the thicker muscle. Now the arteries that are in the heart, because of the thickening of the heart muscle, sometimes get squeezed. So actually the blood flow in the arteries are obstructed because of the thick muscle. So that it's actually occluded because of the squeezing of the heart muscle. So symptoms, very variable. In fact, majority are asymptomatic, or very mild symptoms. But then some of them may present a sudden death as their first symptom. So that's how variable it can be. It can be a very benign patient, and it can be a young patient who will first present in the emergency room with sudden cardiac death after exercise or during exercise. Syncope or passing out and sudden cardiac death in competitive sports. In fact, in the US and in some countries, this is the most common cause of sudden death in a young athlete who is engaged in competitive sports. So, quite devastating, because we think that these people who are our best athletes are supposed to be the fittest in society, so that we don't expect them to just drop dead. So usually, syncope and sudden death, usually in the children. Therefore, if they present with sync or passing out or sudden death in the children, these are usually the patients with high mortality. Most likely, they're not going to live through life till, elderly. They will die young. So that if they present in a young age, or they're diagnosed as, with symptoms as young people, then most of the time they will die early. Now, if you diagnose it in the elderly, so that they only have their symptoms when they're old, usually the hypertrophy is mild, and some of them have outflow tract obstructions, and they have marked symptoms late in life, usually after 55. The mortality here is less compared to the younger patient. It's more in men, less in women, but when the women have it, they're more disabled. So these are the symptoms. Commonly, the most common is difficulty in breathing, some present with angina, some present or chest pain, fatigue, near passing out or passing out common, palpitations, heart failure, and are less common. That means difficulty of breathing and lying down. Sometimes they may present with severe heart failure, culminating in death, usually in the elderly, and usually the symptoms come during exertion, not during rest. So that if sudden death comes, it is during like exercise. Now the passing out can be due to the, I told you about the blockage in the outflow tract. It can be due to the arrhythmia or an irregular heart rhythm like ventricular tachycardia or atrial fibrillation. So that in the young, if you do a Holter in this patient, a 24-hour Holter monitor, you will see ventricular tachycardia. These people are increased risk for sudden death. Now in the elderly, the presence of this finding on the Holter is not very ominous. Usually they will live a full life. So it's usually in the young where it is predictive of early death. Now I won't go through this anymore because the most are the laymen. Now the ECG, because you'll see that. No? Usually it's abnormal, but then it doesn't mean anything. So just like what we showed you in apical cardiomyopathy, bad looking ECG, but then these people have a benign course. So it can be almost anything from a normal ECG to something which can be very abnormal. So I'm not going to go into the details of that. Now the echo is the gold standard for diagnosis. It is used in suspected hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in screening of the relatives. So that you can identify the type of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, whether it's apical, septal hypertrophy, or whatever. The functional aspect, which is you can see the obstruction to the outflow tract, and of course hemodynamic findings, you know, like the obstruction. Now this is an example of the echo. You can see here, this is the left atrium, this is the left ventricle, this is the septum. It's markedly hypertrophied, this line from here to there is the septum, and the lateral wall is thin. So this is disproportionate septal hypertrophy. If you do a cross-section of the left ventricle, you can see that this portion is markedly thick compared to the back portion of the. So you come up with a diagnosis of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Nuclear stress testing is also used to find out if there's ischemia. So that if you see ischemia on the nuclear imaging, then in a young patient with positive stress testing, this is a possible history of sudden death in the young, and it's a probable mechanism of the sudden death in this young patient. What about the cardiac cath, coronary angiogram? It's not required for the diagnosis, but some people, because you see all of this abnormal looking ECG, some people end up with doing a cardiac cath just to rule out that their arteries are open or not. But it's not necessarily a important for diagnosis. Okay, the arrhythmias are the most common cause of sudden death. They're poorly tolerated because of the stiffening of the heart muscle. And you can see non-sustained ventricular tachycardia on the Holters, and they're predictive. But then if they don't have only non-sustained VT, the predictive value is quite limited. So you need to correlate with symptoms of passing out. I'm not going to go through this one. So this is important for you. Natural history, many asymptomatic or mild, which may improve in 5 to 10 years. The annual mortality is 3% in large referral centers, but only 1% when all patients are included, including asymptomatic patients. Because in the referral centers, usually these are the bad patients. But in general, only 1%. In children, the sudden death is higher, about 6% per year. Clinical deterioration is slow, and the number of severely symptomatic increases with age. Now, some people can have progression to a dilated cardiomyopathy in 10 to 15%, quite rare, but it may happen. And then they become poor prognosis. They're most likely will die. We talked about that the echo may develop despite a previous normal echo in young children because it is a dynamic thing. We're not going to go through that. Now, this one is important. Most often sudden may occur in previously asymptomatic patients as their first symptom. in individuals who are unaware that they have the disease, and in patients with otherwise stable poison. It's the most common abnormality found in autopsy in young competitive athletes with sudden death in the US. These are the people who are high risk. Young, less than 30 at diagnosis. Family history of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy with sudden cardiac death, a malignant family history. Abnormal blood pressure response to exercise, that means during a stress test, their blood pressure drops instead of going up. Genetic abnormalities with genetics testing, history of passing out in children, non-sustained BP in a 48-hour halter, massive left ventricular hypertrophy, bradycardia or slow heart rate, and disease or AV block may play a role. We're not going to talk about that. But then I think that we will talk about, because the ICD therapy was, okay, interventions. So, DVD pacemakers are a last line therapy to prevent outflow tract obstruction. So we've done that in some patients in the Philippines. Septal ablation, that means they inject a alcohol into the coronary artery and cause like a heart attack in the septum so it will thin out. I've never seen that done in the Philippines. Surgical, you can open up the heart and cut up the septum so it will become smaller, or you can replace the mitral valve. These are options. And of course, to prevent sudden death is to put in an automatic implantable cardioverter defibrillator. Of course, the other option is just to transplant the heart. We won't talk about that, you know, this one. Okay, this is just an example of a dual chamber pacemaker. Just you can see that it's only class 2B indication, medically refractory patients with outflow tract obstructions. So class 2B means you may or you may not. If you do it, you're fine. If you don't do it, you're not doing so bad anyway. So you may, if the patients don't respond to drugs, then you can put in a dual chamber pacemaker to try to reduce outflow tract obstruction. So this is an example of that, a dual chamber pacemaker. You put one lead in the atrium and the other lead in the ventricle. This is a dual chamber pacemaker. Now this here is a picture of an automatic implantable cardioverter defibrillator. It's much larger than a pacemaker. So you can see that this is the evolution of ICDs. This about 209 cc could only be implanted in the abdomen because it's so large, and the devices now are down to about 39 cc, which is the size of old pacemakers, and we can now implant them on the below the collarbone, the shoulder, because they've now been reduced in size. What do these devices do? Okay, well, this is a programmer for the ICD and the pacemaker, which you can use to interrogate the device or program the device without opening them up again, so you can change their function, find out what happened to your patient using this programmer. So, this is what you'll get in the programmer. For example, your patient has an event, then he comes to your clinic, then you place the wand, this wand, you place it right on top of their device, you interrogate, and in the memory of this ICD, because this has a memory like a little computer there, it will store memories like this one. So this will show you that, for example, this patient was in normal rhythm, then suddenly developed a ventricular tachycardia and a normal fast heart rhythm, and it is sensed by the device, and the device turns on what we call anti-tachycardia pacing. It will pace faster than this ventricular tachycardia and terminates the ventricular abnormal heart rhythm back to normal without shocking the patient. So this is one of its functions. That's what you call ATP or anti-tachycardia pacing. Or this is the ventricular tachycardia. It sensed by the device, given a shock, cardioversion, usually about 18 joules, and back to normal rhythm. Okay. you can see that so that your patient don't need to be rushed to the emergency room for CPR, you know, because the device will save their life. Or if they present with a ventricular fibrillation, which is a rhythm which is almost near death, sensed by, this is normal rhythm, suddenly develop ventricular fibrillation, and sensed by the device, given a defibrillation shock. Asystole or no heart rhythm, and the pacemaker of the device works until the normal rhythm of the patient comes back. So this is an ICD. So this is how it will prevent sudden death, and it's possibly today is the state-of-the-art management for sudden death. Nothing is better than the ICD. No drug is better than the ICD. So this is the experience of ICD in hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. You can see that for secondary prevention, these are people who've had sudden death in the past before their ICD or were passing out. In primary prevention, those people who never had an event first but were considered high risk for sudden death and therefore were just implanted a device. You can see that for those people who've never had an event before, they did get shocks years after implantation. So they got about appropriate discharges. And so their lives were actually saved. For those people who've had events before, even more, they will really use their device sometime, even years after implantation of the ICD. So I got this from, this is actually the HCMA is a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy association. These are actually for patients. You can log into this one into the internet. If you have hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, you want questions about your sickness, you can log into this. This is actually for patients, but it's quite a nice diagram, overall population. If your genotype, this is with genetic testing, genotype positive, phenotype negative, you're just followed up. If you have no or mild symptoms, no treatment or drugs like beta blockers. If you have heart failure, non-obstructive, you treat it with drugs or possibly a transplant. If you have obstructive cardiomyopathy, that means there's obstruction to flow to the aorta. You try the drugs, if you fail, you can try dual chamber pacing, septal ablation, or myomectomy. If you're considered high risk for sudden death, because you have a previous cardiac arrest, massive hypertrophy, significant family history, serious documented arrhythmias, history of passing out, adverse response during a stress test, you're either given amiodarone, which is a drug, or implanted an ICD. The higher risk you are, the better you are with an ICD. So that's the last slide. Thank you.
Just to get into greenhouse, two questions.